Okay, we'll start by thanking you for hosting. We really appreciate it. And thank everyone for coming. And I was excited to come. I didn't know what the turnout would be. I know as much as it's quote-unquote a time off, it's also a busy time. So really appreciate everyone's commitment to coming, both the Talmidim, parents, and Mr. Goldberg for joining us as well. And again, thank you for hosting. It was pointed out that last year we didn't have source sheets and have an opportunity to learn. So the answer is because last year it was a Simchas Beis HaShoeva with the Dvar Torah. Tonight is Hoshana Rabbah. And there's a minhag, which is really what I want to explore together, to learn on Hoshana Rabbah night. So by way of starting, why does that minhag exist? Why is it a minhag to learn Hoshana Rabbah night? It's called Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah. Why? Any thoughts, ideas?
Maybe yes. Because this is your last chance for judgment, so you want to learn right before it's sealed.
Okay, so one of the approaches we'll get to is, it could be this is the very end of the judgment season, and so our last opportunity to plead with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a good year. So probably the oldest source already appears in some of the Rishonim. It doesn't appear in the Gemara. Doesn't really appear in the Gaonim, but if you look at the Avudraham, in the first source, the Avudraham suggests that there's a practice, a halacha, that many people try to observe called Shnai Mikra Ve'achat Targum. Who knows what's Shnai Mikra Ve'achat Targum? Azriel.
You read the Pesukim twice, then you do the Targum?
Very good. Every Parsha, so in preparation for that Parsha, or alongside that Parsha, we're supposed to read the Parsha Shnai Mikra twice in the Chumash, an echa targum and one explanation. Typically, we use Targum Onkelos, some of you use Rashi, but others are supposed to do that alongside the Parsha. And procrastinating is not a newfound practice. It already goes back to the days of the Avudraham. The Avudraham suggests that perhaps the reason for the practice is we're supposed to finish Shnai Mikra Echa Targum alongside finishing the Seder HaParshios, all the Parshios. So we're going to complete Chamisha Chumshei Torah on Simchas Torah morning with Vizos HaBracha. So many of us, again, at least in his time, were not necessarily up to date. So they had to make up literally all the Parshas. I don't know how many Parshas there are in the Torah.
52.
52, is that true?
52 or 54, either one. Because there's double Parshas.
So okay, you can you can look at it. It's 52? Okay, 52 Parshios. So it takes a lot of time to make that up. And so he suggests, so people would stay up all night doing Shnai Mikra Ve'achat Targum. The Avudraham rejects this explanation. He rejects it on very practical purposes. He said it would be incredibly hard. We knew how many Parshios there were. I don't know how many Psukim there are in the Torah. I don't know the answer. I was hoping someone else would. But anyway, so if you do, to say all of those psukim twice and the targum once, he says is basically impossible to do on one night. So he suggests he does not think that is the reason why. But if you look through, and we won't go through everything inside, if you look through the Avudraham, he does, the third line, V'nirali shekriyazu enamo eles klal lepotram itakanas chachamim. He says it wouldn't really... That's not in the spirit of what we're trying to do. The goal is to learn the Parshas HaShavua every week, not just to put it all in one night. We call that cramming. Parenthetically, I will tell you, just because I'm a teacher and I care about how one studies and prepares, cramming is not the best way to know information. So if the goal is to learn Chumash and you just stay up all night, one night learning it, you're not going to retain a lot. You're not going to, correct. Even if you chaz it, you're not going to retain it. What is the best way to study? Is if you do in small segments and really organize the material, but just to cram it in once, the description I always give to the boys in my shir is that if your parents ask you to clean your room and you take everything and you cram it into the closet, you can succeed in cleaning your room. And when your parents walk in to check the room, it is clean. But as soon as you open up that closet door and you have to find something, good luck. You're not going to be able to find it. It's all literally crammed in there. Our brain is like a closet. It's like a filing cabinet. If you cram everything in there and then the teacher asks you to find your sock, right? They won't literally ask you to find your sock. Hopefully they won't ask you to find your sock. But they ask you to find that bit of information and you just crammed it in there. It's like finding that sock in your messy, messy closet. If on the other hand, you take your socks and you fold them up neatly, and you put them away in the right drawer, and you know, again, it's the same thing with each article of clothing, and then your room is actually neatly organized, and then you have to look for something, it's very easy to find that information. Again, the material is the same thing. If we file it away neatly and organized in our brain, it's very easy to recall it. Savudram says it's not very effective that way. It also is not very practical. So he doesn't think that that is the suggestion. If you look, I'm sorry, I misnumbered the sources, but the Magen Avraham says also that he also quotes this long-standing minog of Nogin Yisrael Lios Ne'urim Belel Arava, is that we have this practice of staying up late. So what then would be the reason? So one of the reasons that was suggested is this is the chasima, the final decree for what our year will be like. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah says that, based on the Mishnah, it is the final decree. What specifically are we judged on over Sukkos?
Rain,
correct. So Besukkos Nidonan Alamayim, we're judged for rain. And he suggests, it's fascinating, if you look through different minhagim of Hoshana Rabbah, there are many echoes of Yom Kippur. Where do we see, kind of these echoes of Yom Kippur in Hoshana Rabbah practices? What would you say?
Banging the Hoshanas.
How does that remind you of Yom Kippur?
Bang a chest, I'll help you out.
Okay.
Right.
That's good. So I didn't see that quoted somewhere, but that could be.
The
chazmer is a kittel, right?
Yeah,
good.
Kippur tunes, and if the chazmer is doing right.
Right. So we use Yom Noraim tunes. If you look in source 5, the Shulchan Aruch, so you see he gives the following kind of remnants of Yom Kippur. Marbim ktsas b'neiros kumo b'yom ha-kippurim. So he says, and I saw this quote, I forget where, that actually there are people who would use the candle that was lit throughout Yom Kippur, whatever is left of that candle, they actually light it on Hoshana Rabbah. Again, a connection between Yom Kippur and Hoshana Rabbah. The Shulchan Aruch just says we use many candles like Yom Kippur. Then the Ramah says, Hamidaktikim Noagim Litvol Atzmam Kodam Alos HaShachar. Some people go to the mikvah. I don't know if that's part of the Bekesha.
No.
No, okay. But some people, the Ramah says...
They go daily.
Yeah. So he says that there are those who go to the mikvah on Hoshana Rabbah morning, kemo be'erev Yom Kippurim, again as a throwback to Yom Kippur. Yesh nogim lilbos hakittel kemo b'Yom Kippur, like we said, lefisha b'chag nidonim alamayim. Okay, if you look in source 6, the Neter Gavriel quotes another minug, which is Leil Hoshana Rabbah mispal tefilas arvis. There's a certain sense of trepidation with which we daven. It would have been earlier tonight that we daven. Again, like Yom Kippur. And I saw fascinating...
Have you... Because I didn't really notice, even though Hoshana Rabbah is a big day, I don't notice people upping their davening at night.
So I think in the morning we have that. Yeah. So you feel it a little more in the morning, while we recognize there are those who want to go a little bit faster. It's a long davening. So I don't know that I see that so much.
I think also Hasidim, like, they're really into
Hasidim, very into Hoshana Rabbah. Yeah. And there's also talk about Hasidim, which you didn't mention a minute. They hear the whole Devarim of Red.
So correct. So that's a lot of what Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah is. And it's probably because some of the sources go back to Arizal. A lot of the why we have Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah may come from that Arizal. What?
The Yechids are also into Hoshana Rabbah. I remember...
Right. So my father was telling me today we're Yeki, and my father told me today he has some sitter, I guess, which goes back a couple generations, which is Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah and Tikkun Leil Shavuos. But the truth is that within our communities, I think even those of us who engage in Tikkun Leil Shavuos don't use the sitter Tikkun Leil Shavuos. We learn Shavuos night. Again, I think that what's left in many of our communities as far as Hoshana Rabbah is concerned is not necessarily a recitation of Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah as much as trying to use time to learn. But I think there is really a strong Yekim and Hagim in terms of, and they say Sefer Dvarim. It could be it's a remnant of the Hakel experience a little bit as well. Just one last place where we'll see this minog a little bit. And again, I don't think practically speaking we've seen it, but if you look in Source 7, the Sefer called Tamei HaMinhagim, he quotes the following, Yesh Mekomos, I don't know, if anyone's seen this, let me know. She'omrim b'chol ha-kadishim le'elo le'ela, which again, that's a remnant to Aseres Mei Tshuva. With Sefer Orchos Chaim, Kasu, B'shem Tferaz Shlomo Al-Arash, Shemaram hayinu glumar b'hoshana rabba hamelach hakadosh hamelach hamishpat. Again, I haven't seen this, but that still is this idea that there is a sense of this being the third of the Yom Noraim. There's Rosh Hashanah, there's Yom Kippur, there's Hoshana Rabbah.
But the Tefillah itself is so different because it has components of weekday davening, components of Shabbos, components of Yom Kippur, all put together.
Right.
It's a very, very different Tefillah than the other Tefillah during the year.
Correct. Right. So practically speaking, not sure how many of these Minhagim, right, it's like a little bit, Hoshana Rabbah has become a conglomerate of all the things that you just said. And it probably reflects the fact that Hoshana Rabbah doesn't have a perfectly singular approach to what exactly we're doing, right? And again, the tefillah represents that. There's a part of it that's a weekday part. There's a part of it that we say Shabbos and Yontif Psukit Zimra. The part of it that has a Yontif component to it, right? And again, a Yom Noraim component to it. And there are parts, if you look at the Minhagim, that really reflect all of that. We say the Yud Gimel Midas Harachamim when we take out the Sefer Torah, when we use that tune as well. But at least this part that's a reflection of the Yom Noraim would be probably a reflection of the fact that this is the last component of Judgment Day. And the Sefer called the Panini Halacha, the contemporary Sefer by Rav Melamed, points out that Kishem Shehamayim Mekayim Mesachayim Bo'olam Hazeh, Kach Hamayim Haruchnim Shem HaTorah Mekayim Mesachayi HaRuach. Again, that in this regard, the same way we're Nidon Al Hamayim on Sukkot, and this is the culmination of that. So in Mayim El Torah, there's a component that tonight, therefore, if we're going to be judged on water, so water could refer to the water of Torah. I saw something fascinating. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky points out, I didn't see it inside, but I saw it quoted, that apparently, again, recognizing that this is the third part of the Yom HaDin, but that tension that exists within, on the other hand, is how do we describe Sukkot? Sukkot is Zman Simchasein, right? And so what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky points out is that if we knew that it was such an awe-inspiring Yom HaDin, that would very much interfere with Zman Simchasein. It's hard. We have this dialectic on Rosh Hashanah where we're supposed to, on the one hand, feel that sense of Simcha, and on the other hand, feel that sense of awe and reverence for being a Yom HaDin. It's very hard to live in both of those spaces at once. So Yaakov Kamenetsky says it didn't become so well known. In other words, again, you go home tonight, not everyone is feeling that it's a Yom HaDin. I think the house doesn't feel the same as Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So why is it manifest in terms of Talmud Torah? So he points out that Talmud Torah is unique to an elite kind of people. Right? Only serious people sit and learn Torah. What we would call the Hamon Am, just the regular people, don't always get to learn Torah in the same way. But the really distinguished people, the people who really look to grow in a significant way, they're involved in Talmud Torah. And again, certainly historically, it's more true. Nowadays, I think Baruch Hashem, more people have access to Talmud Torah. If you go back, 250 years, probably even more recently than that, learning Torah on a high level was reserved for people, who are more committed to Talmud Torah per se. And so Yaakov Kamenetsky points out that this Yom HaDin was snuck in to people who were on such a level that they'd spend the night learning Torah. And those people specifically were able to live in the two worlds of appreciating Zman Simchaseinu while at the same time appreciating the awe and reverence of the Yom HaDin of Hoshana Rabbah being the final part of the Yom HaDin. And again, for most other people, they wouldn't have that awe and trepidation. They would just appreciate the Zman Simchaseinu. So again, one idea perhaps of why Hoshana Rabbah is a night of learning is a reference to this notion of it being a Yom HaDin. But perhaps there actually are echoes of the other holidays all wrapped into one. And that's what I'd like to explore. So it could also be a reflection of Shavuos. What connection exists between Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah? Anyone a calendar buff? What calendar connection exists between Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah?
Hoshana Rabbah is the 21st, right?
What night of the week is Hoshana Rabbah this year? That's not such a hard question. Correct.
Same night?
The previous Shavuos. Correct.
Yeah. It's because of Rosh Hashanah. Right? Rosh Hashanah is always programmed to be the third day after Pesach, and Hoshana Rabbah is always the day before Rosh Hashanah. So it comes out the same Shavuos.
Correct. So it always, Hoshana Rabbah and Shavuos are always the same night of the week. Again, the previous Shavuos. So the previous Shavuos is Motzei Shabbos, so Hoshana Rabbah is Motzei Shavuos. It could simply be a calendar quirk. It could be exactly as you described. But perhaps, again, there is this correlation, this connection between Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah in terms of engaging in Talmud Torah.
So there's Abfash
right.
for the night of Pesach.
Yes.
Right.
And Shavuos, the second is Shavuos, not Hoshana Rabbah, but that's also probably because it's just programmed because of Hoshana.
Correct. So again, at least for the purposes of a shir, it works out well for Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah. Again, thematically, it works out well for them to be. I understand that it's a little bit of a stretch on the calendar level, but again, thematically, it does work out well. Why would that make sense? So it's not so crazy in the sense that Shavuos was the culmination of Kabbalah HaTorah. We prepared for 7 weeks for Kabbalah HaTorah. So again, in that capacity, Hoshana Rabbah is really the end of a long period of preparation. It's not exactly the same number of days, but again, it is the end of that culmination. Yeah, please.
We have here. But I was reading the Machon HaMikdash puts out a matzer on Sukkot, and I was reading in that matzer that actually Purim was really brought more on Sukkot than on Shavuos. Shavuos is the beginning, but most people didn't yet have their Purim, and they certainly didn't all go to Yerushalayim. The last day that you can read the Parsha of Bikurim and bring Bikurim in Yerushalayim is Hoshana Rabbah.
Okay.
You don't bring it. You can't bring them on Shmini Atzeres. And after Sukkot, you don't read anymore. Between Sukkot and Hanukkah, you can bring, but you don't read. So the last day, and they said, if you think about what was happening in Yerushalayim on Hoshana Rabbah, basically, which was crowded, it's crowded because of the home Seirot and all the people who were coming with their whole procession. From the big procession to try to read the Quran before Yom
Kippur. Okay. So another connection between Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah. And the Sfas Emes suggests, the Sfas Emes commenting on Parshas Hazinu suggests that part of why Hoshana Rabbah becomes this night of Talmud Torah, not necessarily unique to Hoshana Rabbah specifically, but in the Sifrei Chassidus, they talk a lot about Sur Merav Aseh Tov, that we've spent the last, you know, the previous 50 days, starting Rosh Chodesh, or 40, yeah, at this point, close to 50 days, preparing for this day. In other words, we've spent the time involved in introspection, in tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and through this tshuva process. And after cleansing ourselves, after that full Torah process, we're then ready to fully immerse ourselves in Torah learning, and to do so with a sense of Torah, similar to the fact that we had, again, these days of preparation, right? The 49 days, the 7 weeks of preparation for Kabbalah HaTorah, starting with Yetzias Mitzrayim, we spend those times preparing for Kabbalah HaTorah. There's a beautiful story I came across of a high school boy in Israel, speaking of our Gedolim pictures, and this high school boy was getting ready to go visit the great Gadol who passed away a few years ago, Aaron Leib Steinman. And one of his friends saw him getting ready and asked to come along. And the friend said, you can come. We'll call the friend who's going to visit him. We'll call him Reuven. The friend who wants to tag along, we'll call him Shimon. So Reuven told Shimon, you can come along on one condition. You have to be quiet. You can't say anything when I meet with Reb Steinman. You have to sit there quietly. So Shimon said, fine. Sounds like a fun activity nonetheless. So Reuven goes to Aaron Leib Steinman. He waits his turn, and he's escorted in to sit down with this Gadol Hador from Steinman. And this 16-year-old boy, Reuven, looks at Reb Steinman. Reb Steinman was like the model of simplicity. Like, he literally didn't engage with the physical world. He just was a very, very simple person. And this Reuven, the 16-year-old, looks at him and says, does the Rosh Yeshiva like steak? So literally, Aaron Leib Steinman, the way the story goes, didn't know what steak was. So he said, no, not particularly interested. So he said, but it's tasty, it's geschmack, it's delicious. How could Rosh Yeshiva not like it? And he's like, and you could imagine, like, the picture, the gabbai is like ready to pull this boy, you know, out of the room. And he says, what about ice cream? Does the Rosh Yeshiva like ice cream? It's like, I really have, like, literally zero temptation for ice cream. How could it be? Everyone says it's delicious. And like, the gabbai is using every, you know, last ounce of self-control to not pull the 16-year-old out of out of the meeting. And finally, the 16-year-old looks at Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman and says to him, but everyone tells me that Torah learning is geschmack also. And I don't like it. I don't find it to be tasty. You don't find steak to be tasty or ice cream. I don't find Talmud Torah. Why am I like not entitled to that opinion? How could I respond when people tell me, but it's so geschmack? And now that same Gabbai is already like, everyone's now sitting to hear, how is the Rosh Yeshiva going to answer this? And he said, is there a food that everyone finds to be really sweet? And the boy says, yeah, honey. Honey is a very sweet food. So he said, so Reb Steinman looks at the boy and says, is it possible for someone to not like honey? Yeah, why would someone not like honey? Don't like honey? It's too sweet. One of my sons doesn't like honey. So if you have canker sores, if there are things in your... So it would exacerbate the canker sore a little bit. So this is if a person has something, has a problem, if he has a sore, there's something which could interfere with his ability. If you lose your taste buds, you could lose the ability to enjoy that sweetness. But if you're able to progress, if you're able to deal with those sores, then you'll come to appreciate the sweetness of honey. So he said, whatever it is right now, perhaps there's something that's getting in the way of your enjoying Torah. But Torah, at its essence, is sweet. And whatever it is that's interfering with your ability to access it, if you're able to work through that challenge, you'll appreciate the sweetness of honey. Luckily, the boy didn't look at him and say, I hope the Rosh Yeshiva can enjoy ice cream as well. But it always resonated
that
with me.
That's a very philosophical question. That's what he got to. His point that he was making.
Correct. Yeah. So I share in the sense that I think that's part of this Hoshana Rabbah and Shavuos night, is that Torah is not something we just stumble into, but it's something that we prepare for. It's something that we invest ourselves in getting ready to appreciate Torah. And it's the same thing that happens over the 7 weeks leading up to Shavuos. We're able to really immerse ourselves in that preparation. Shavuos doesn't just happen. And a similar way, Hoshana Rabbah doesn't just happen. Being able to enjoy a night of learning, being able to immerse ourselves in Talmud Torah tonight is not something that just happened, but it comes as an outgrowth of the weeks and weeks of slichos and davening and tshuva and introspection, which is carried out. Again, there's a beautiful, I think, process to what that looks like from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, where we deprive ourselves of physicality, and then we kind of flip it on its head over Sukkot, and we engage in physicality, and we very much enjoy the world and life around us. That's all a process which is geared at getting us to this night, to Hoshana Rabbah. We're able to take all of that and everything that makes us who we are, again, the Rosh Hashanah parts of who we are, the Yom Kippur parts of who we are, the Sukkot parts of who we are, and to enjoy a night of learning. Is what one other thought within the Shavuos component, it's not really about the connection, but it's about this idea of staying up all night, which always resonated very much with me. There's a Gemara in Maseches Megillah, which describes Yoshua and Klal Yisrael camped outside of Yericho. I don't know if you guys up this in Bikias? Do you start from the beginning?
Yeah,
okay, we're not. We start. We'll get here at some point. So the Gemara says as follows: Yoshua again, and all of Klal Yisrael camped outside of Yericho, and the Gemara says, "Vayhi bios Yoshua be Yericho." It's the bottom source 9. Vaysaw ina vayar v'nei ish omed l'negdo. Vayishtachavu. Yoshua sees this person standing opposite him, and he bows to this person. The Gemara asks, "Heichi avid, avid hachi? How could Yoshua bow down to this person?" V'amar Yoshua ben Levi, "Asur la'adam shitein shalom l'chaver balayla, chayshinan shemeshedhu." You don't know who this person is. You know, is it a person? Is it a demon? How could you bow down to it? The Gemara answers, "Shaini hasim da'amar lei kani sar tzva Hashem." This quote-unquote person actually introduced himself. He said, "I'm a sartz, I'm a malach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu." So now you have Yoshua talking to a malach. It's a powerful conversation. The Gemara says, "V'dilma mishakri." Maybe the malach is lying. The Gemara answers, "Gemire dilomafki shem shamayim levatala." Now we have a rule that a shade would never say shem shamayim, would never say Hashem's name levatala. So when this person said, when this angel said, "Sartz v'Hashem," he knew it had to be the real deal, the real McCoy. Amar lo, emesh bitaltam talmid shel ben arbaim, ve'achshav bitaltam talmud Torah. So this malach says to Yoshua, "Hashem sent me to take you to task. have to hold you accountable. Yesterday, you didn't bring a korban. You missed out on korbanos. And today, you missed Talmud Torah. How could you do this? So Yoshua says to the Malach, Al Eza Mehen Basa. Which one did you come for? You're reprimanding me about two things. But a Malach only comes with one mission. So what's the one that, what's the number one issue that I really did wrong? Amarlo, the Malach says to him, Ata Basi. Now I came. So what is Ata? What? So Ata is a reference to Torah. And then the Gemara says, Miyad Vailan Yoshua Balailahu Besochaimek. Amar Yochan Melamed Shalan Baomka Shal Torah. He got the message. The message was, you are Mevatel Talmud Torah, and now you have to learn. The Panovich Rav, the great Rav Kahaneman, who was known as an incredible Darshan, asked, why is this the pasuk that he quoted, Atabasi? There are a lot of pasukim he could have quoted. Why did he quote this pasuk of Ata, and now I came? So he points out this word Ata, Ayin Tav Hei, comes up in another context in describing Torah. Anyone know what that pasuk is? It'll be very impressive. We did read it fairly recently. We'll take that out of the recording. Correct. Very good. So Panovich Rav says, it comes up in the context of Vata kisu lachem es ashira azos v'lomdas b'nei Yisrael. And you should write this Torah, I'm sorry, now write this Torah. And the way in that pasuk it describes the Torah is a shira. And he points this out in the context of a couple things. One is perhaps, halachically speaking, there was a concept of osik mitzvah patur min mitzvah. Perhaps at this time, Klal Yisrael didn't actually have to involve themselves in Talmud Torah. Halachically speaking, they could have been exempt. However, he points out that's only if you view Talmud Torah as a requirement, as a responsibility, as something that I have to do. On a responsibility level, he points out that Klal Yisrael was exempt. However, if you view Torah not as a responsibility, not as an achrayas, not as a mitzvah, but as a shira, what's a shira? A song. It's not a responsibility, it's a thing of beauty. And he points out that Vilna Gaon actually says the difference between a zimra and a shira, which in Hebrew they both mean song. What's the difference between a zemer and a shira? So he actually says a zemer has a defined beginning and end. Not sure again what exactly the Vilna Gaon is based on, but this is what the Vilna Gaon says. But a shira has no defined beginning and end. A shira is a shira because it could go on continuously. And he says Torah therefore is described as a shira because it's a thing of beauty, it's harmonious, it's joyful, it's emotional, but it also has no end to it. And therefore what the Malach was saying to Yoshua is you're taking the out, you're taking the excuse, but to love Talmud Torah is to get caught up in it, to immerse oneself without a beginning and an end. And perhaps, again, that's the Shavuos and Hoshana Rabbah. Again, even if there aren't tons of connections, but the notion of staying up, those nights, I remember one year after I got married, not staying up Shavuos night, because if you're a real yeki and you really think through logically speaking how much time a person spends learning Shavuos night.
It destroys the next day.
And this, correct. And Shavuos, there's to learn on Shavuos. One should learn on Shavuos. They don't only have to learn Shavuos night. So, again, like on a very logical level, I said I'll probably learn more if I don't stay up all night Shavuos night. But I did that one year, and then the rest of the time I've stayed up. Why? Because, again, the idea is that I love learning so much that love sick makes a person stay up. And they don't work within, rational thinking so much per se. They get caught up in the beautiful song, in the joy, in the excitement. And so we stay up, and again, whether people are going to stay up all night or not tonight, but to involve oneself in learning. So that's, again, is an appreciation we have on Shavuos night, and we have that on Hoshana Rabbah night. Just want to share two other quick thoughts as far as perhaps this connection between Hoshana Rabbah and learning. And the third, I think we kind of go through the different holidays, is Sukkot. So the Torah says something fascinating, which is, it's most fascinating because it comes in the Torah. The Torah is a sefer halacha. And it's not something that necessarily I would have thought the Torah would say, but the Torah says each of the Shalosh Regalim corresponds to one of the Avos. So who corresponds to Pesach? Avraham. Why does Avraham relate to Pesach? So he quotes, and we'll look through the source inside. Correct. He's the first person who made matzah, so to speak, for his visitors. And so the Torah quotes, this is source 11, V'shamati me'achi ha'ri tam ledavar, ha'ri tam ledavar l'fisha mo'adim niskanu k'neged avos. Pesach k'neged Avraham d'chsiv lushi v'asiugos u'pesach haya. That took place on Pesach. So again, that was the first matzahs. Avraham made matzah. That took place on Pesach. Shavuos k'neged Yitzchak. Shavuos correlates to Yitzchak. It's fascinating. Why does Shavuos correlate to Yitzchak? Shetchias shofar shel matan Torah yabish shofar me'elo shel Yitzchak. The shofar which took place, that was blown at Mamad Har Sinai, relates to the shofar from the ram of Yitzchak. Okay, fascinating historically. Sukkos k'neged Yaakov. And Sukkos relates to Yaakov. Why does Sukkos relate to Yaakov? Correct. That Yaakov made Sukkos, he made huts for his cattle. Yud Beis Rosh Chodesh Hashana, and the 12 Rosh Chodeshes correlate to the 12 Shvatim. So if you think about Sukkos and think about Yaakov, so Sukkos is actually a fascinating holiday. I saw Rice Sachs describe, why do we read Koheles on Shabbos Chol HaMoed? Any thoughts? Why do we read Kohel Shabbos Chol HaMoed?
But it's so sad. It's like counter of Yom Sim Baseinu. It's interesting why it's read.
Correct.
So to tame down our excitement, so we could get out of hand.
Right. So perhaps it's to temper the excitement, or to help us realize that what real joy is and what real joy isn't. And real joy is not gathering and amassing wealth, but real joy is about appreciating our blessings. So again, it could be that that's one of the reasons. Rabbi Sachs suggests that Sukkos is the most universal holiday and Kohel is the most universal Megillah. I mean, most Megillahs relate specifically to the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Koheles, joy, and not chasing after material wealth, and how to discover joy does not have to be a uniquely Jewish concept. And he suggests Sukkos is not a uniquely Jewish holiday. We start, right, Sukkos, we bring 70 korbanos, and that's supposed to correlate to the 70 nations of the world. So that's what he suggests. But perhaps what we progress over the course of Sukkos, we may start that way, but at the very end of Sukkos, we bring one korban. And that's supposed to relate not to the 70 nations of the world, but there's a progression from the 70 nations of the world to the unique relationship that we celebrate at the end of Sukkos, the unique relationship that we cherish with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And perhaps, again, in that context, Yaakov is the only one of the three Avos who all of his children were Jewish. Right? Avram is the father of two nations. Yitzchak, the father of two nations. Yaakov is the father only of Klal Yisrael. So again, there's this progression that Sukkos may start out universal, but ultimately it ends up in that relationship we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's manifest uniquely with our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Torah. Yaakov is also the one of the Avos in which we say Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, right? That he was the one who sat and learned in yeshiva for many, many years. So again, perhaps Hoshana Rabbah is that culmination of Sukkos being a Yoshev Ohalim of Yaakov of spending the time learning. The last approach is the Ushpizins. Who knows which Ushpizin is tonight?
David.
So David, and again, if you look at the Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah, I think it's Sefer Dvarim, and it's also some Tehillim. And David HaMelech, we know, the Gemara tells us he used to stay up all night. And what would he do staying up all night? He'd really do two things. He'd learn Torah, and he'd say Tehillim. And so as a throwback to David HaMelech, we involve ourselves in those two things as well. I saw a beautiful idea when the Gemara describes David HaMelech staying up all night in Source 13. Rabbi Zera Amar, Ad chatzos halayla haya misnamnim kesus. Mikan va'ela chay misgaber ka'ari. He would start out, the description is he was like a horse. He would doze off like a horse. And then from chatzos and on, he would be like a lion. It's good for the MT lions. Right, so he'd have Torah and he'd have Shiras v'Tishbachos, which we would describe as Tehillim. What is the imagery of a horse and a lion? So Rabbi Glasser points out, or Yaakov Glasser, Rabbi in Pesach points out something fascinating. If you think about these two animals, you think about a horse. So we try to harness a horse. In other words, the goal of horseback riding is trying to harness the power of a horse. So we try to train a horse. We go horseback, right? There's thoroughbred racing. But the idea is trying to harness it, so to speak, trying to take the power that exists and harness into a specific direction. So he says that was part of the leadership of David HaMelech as a leader, was to take Klal Yisrael and to take all of the disparate personalities, all of the skills, all of the resources, and to harness it like a horse. That was the early part of David HaMelech. But what's the Yisgaber Ka'ari? The Yisgaber Ka'ari is not trying to harness the power and the talent of others, but is actually internally, right? The lion is fierce and ferocious on its own. It doesn't need to harness other people's talent, doesn't need to harness other people's gifts. It has its own gift. It has its own ability to roar like a lion. And in that capacity, again, perhaps Hoshana Rabbah is really us coming out in that lion sense of being able to appreciate the gift that exists within each and every one of us. And the message that really we'd like to end with is that notion that exists and continues on to Simchas Torah, right? Where on Simchas Torah, every single person gets an aliyah. And the reason why perhaps every single person gets an aliyah is to appreciate that every single person has a unique connection with Chilek and Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is not someone else's thing. It's not that there are Kollel people who learn. It's not that there are Rabbanim who learn. Talmud Torah is something that each and every Jew has a Chilek of, right? When we celebrate the culmination of Torah, it's celebrating the culmination of each person's chelek of Talmud Torah. We know Yisrael stands for Yeshi, or can stand for Yeshi Shem Riboy Osios the Torah. Every person has a letter in the Torah. Every person has a unique chelek in the Torah. So every person gets an aliyah. And then we hold the Torah up, right? And we actually, right, when the first Hagbah we do, we put our hands backwards and we hold the Torah up for everyone to be able to see the Torah. Normally, we kind of keep the Torah facing the person doing Hagbah. But Simchas Torah morning, we show everyone the Torah to remind everyone that they have that unique connection to Talmud Torah. Perhaps that's part of the message on Hoshana Rabbah night, is to reinforce and to strengthen and renew that connection we each have to Talmud Torah. So God willing, we appreciate everyone spending the time tonight involved in Talmud Torah. That should be a sign of a year of success in Talmud Torah, of hatzlacha of Talmud Torah, of growth in Talmud Torah, and of joy in Talmud Torah.